Town, Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our subject today is education activism. A lot of big stuff happening in education right now in Alaska, and everyone's talking about it. And so we're going to talk about it too and welcome your calls for a community discussion about education funding and education choice. Choice sort of being the term of art that's in the air now about allowing vouchers for public funding to be taken to private and religious schools. And of course, that's a big issue in the legislature right now. And I can in fact give an update. Today, the Alaska Senate was planning to vote on a constitutional amendment that would allow that kind of voucher program. That vote will not take place. The sponsors of the bill apparently did not have enough votes, and it's been pulled back to the Rules Committee. So we are not going to be having a vote today on the constitutional amendment, SJR 9. But it's still a hot issue, and there's a lot to talk about regarding that bill and regarding the base student allocation, which is the money that's provided to public schools around Alaska and the amount that is provided. Tons to talk about, and I have two great guests in the studio. But before I introduce them, I need to give a little bit of a disclaimer about myself. As a lot of listeners know, I'm very involved in education. I'm a part-time executive director of a group called Citizens for the Educational Advancement of Alaska's Children, which is a coalition of rural schools. And I'm also the co-chair of School Bonds Yes, which is a group that advocates for passage of school construction funding here in Anchorage. And I also have two kids in the Anchorage School District, and in fact, a product of the Anchorage School District. So a lot of things there, but my job is to be unbiased and disinterested as a host and moderator for today's show, and I'm going to try to do that, and I welcome our callers and guests to let me know if I'm not living up to that. So I have two guests in the studio. David Neese is with the Alaska Policy Forum. He taught junior high math for many years, is now retired. Two kids who graduated from Service High. He's run for the school board, and he's a member of the House Sustainable Education Task Force. David, it sounds like school issues keep you very, very busy. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, you'd think after I retire, I'd run away from it. But no, it's part of my life, so I keep very involved in it.
Well, and I'm glad to have you here with us today. And Dina Mitchell is with Great Alaska Schools Anchorage, which is a brand new organization. She has two students at West, one at Romig. And this sounds like this is an all-consuming thing for you, Dina, in working on these issues.
Absolutely. I've kind of jumped in with both feet, and the rest of my family is bemoaning that.
And Great Alaska Schools is all about increasing funding through the base student allocation so that public schools get more money. And we welcome your calls and comments on today's show. We live on them. And the number here in the studio is 550-8433. And you can also reach us by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I see some calls are already coming in, but I want to begin by just having our two guests talk about their point of view and how they come to the issue. I know everyone here cares most about education, making sure kids are well educated. Dina, how did you become involved in this? I guess you've been involved in starting a brand new organization. What got you started, and sort of what's your main goal?
Well, you know, I moved here 3 years ago, and when I came here, I was a little bit surprised by the way that school budgets were being approached here, because I had moved here from an area that had a school district that actually had taxing ability and was able to control their budgets to a much greater extent than the schools here. And the first year we were here, when I saw all the pink slipping of teachers, I was just shocked that there was that going on, and the schools didn't really know what their final budget number was. So from the time I got here, I thought, this is an issue I need to get involved with. And I had actually looked around a little bit and thought that the United Way group would be interesting to join in with. But in the meantime, you know, we were having some settling issues, and I was focusing on my family more. And then this year, we had somebody come to our PTA. Actually, one of the teachers came in to talk about this year's budget cuts, and it just hit me how drastic they were. And I just started learning more about it, reached out to a couple of other parents in our school. I've been on the West PTA for 3 years now. And we've heard about some other parents who were actually had scheduled a meeting of concerned community members. And I believe that first meeting was on January 25th at Winterbury Charter School, but it was not associated with the school. It was just the meeting place. And there were about 60 people who came together that day. So out of that group grew this Great Alaska Schools Anchorage group that just said, we cannot have a fourth year in a row of staff and teacher cuts. It's really hurting our students. We've made so much progress, and we need to try to keep on that trajectory. And we had a rally on February 22nd, mm-hmm. four weeks after our first meeting, and we're just really a group of parents and community members, grandparents, and people without children were just a lot of people mm-hmm. with a lot of energy who feel incredibly strongly that we are really jeopardizing our children's futures.
All right. David Neese, Alaska Policy Forum, is a conservative, you could call it a conservative think tank.
Conservative think tank.
And how do you come to these issues? What are your main goals?
Well, our main goal in education is that we think that you could probably have better allocation of resources. We've been critical of the district on some of the allocation of resources. Like, mm-hmm. I agree with Dina, you know, watching teachers get cut out of a budget. I mean, you have a five-year-old draw a picture of a school. It's a school, maybe a school bus, and some kids sitting in there. There's always a teacher in the picture. Mm-hmm. And to cut teachers out of the budget is one of your first choices. We don't think makes good budgetary sense. There's a lot of areas. I mean, you got a very large budget. There's 1% is what you're talking about. They could have come from another area. So it's a prioritization and bringing bringing out awareness of some of the spending.
So you feel that, at least from the point of view of Anchorage, there's enough money there, they don't need an increase, or what's your sense on this BSA issue?
Well, on the BSA issue, we feel like there's a lot of districts that are in much more of a hurt than Anchorage is. Anchorage, Kenai, for instance, has been planning for a soft landing for like about 10 years. And Anchorage tends to like jerk the rudder one way or the other instead of trying to figure out how to glide down there. So the patterns of spending have not changed at all there. There just seems to be no will to change. And it seems to be most of the decisions that they're doing on the budget are politically motivated to send people down to Juneau to demand more money.
And so tell us about the other issue that SJR 9 is the sort of the name that's been attached to it, but it's a constitutional amendment to remove a provision in the Alaska Constitution that says public funds can't be used for private and religious schools. And you're advocating to remove that so that that we can do a voucher program?
Yeah, and the two are separate. There's a separate bill for vouchers. So right now it's just to strike the third sentence. Third sentence was inserted by a committee that did the Bill of Rights, because education's a right. There was no education committee at the Constitution. So basically, it restores it back to the first two sentences. And last sentence, the second sentence ends with secular in nature. And Judge Diamond said that that's good enough. It covers it. It's not a big deal after that. And then Senator Dunleavy has a voucher bill that's working through. So this is like get rid of it was an anti-Catholic sentence that was inserted in there. It was required and by Senator Blaine. And it's been removed in several states that put it in, and it's been tested constitutionally. So you can strike it out and still have the separation. So for us, it's kind of like, yes, we have to provide a public education. Yes, it has to be secular in nature. No, it doesn't have to be anti-Catholic.
All right. Well, and I'm sure others will have a different perception of whether it's anti-Catholic or not. But in any event, at this point, it would be a matter of striking that so that Senator Dunleavy's bill could then pass to create a voucher program. Is that fair to say?
The legislature would have to come up with a system for allocating public funds in an indirect manner, because you cannot have a direct manner. The Supreme Court said it has to be indirect. So it either had to be given to the parents to spend where they want, credit on a property tax or something like mm-hmm. that. But they'd have to come up with a program.
All right. It's Hometown Alaska, and obviously our topic today is education funding. Should it be increased from the state level through this base student allocation, which we call the BSA? And should the funding be allowed through a change to the Constitution to go to private and religious schools? And we have a lot of callers lined up. Jesse is calling. Jesse, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I just wanted to say that I'm actually quite hopeful that our lawmakers are going to make the right call and think about doing more to prioritize our students' education. And I think that it's due time that we think about the fact that costs are rising up around us in our homes, in our businesses, and it's happening across our state, in our districts, and in our classrooms. And we need to have adequate funding for our students, and I support a significant increase to the BSA, at least $400 per student. And I am very excited about the momentum around this issue. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the comment. Let's go to Barb, who also has a comment. Barb?
Hi. I'm Drew West High, and I just wanted to comment on something that Mr. Lee said. He said we shouldn't be cutting teachers, and that is absolutely true. We should not be cutting teachers. But I think it bears remembering that we're a team. I don't go to work by myself. I go to work with a lot of backup. I go to work with the backup of counselors and support staff and graduation coaches and a lot of people who more and more aren't there. Anything they stop doing, I need to start doing, particularly counseling. Our counselors are incredible, incredible people, and they are counselors. They're not just classroom schedulers. They deal with kids whose parents, I had a kid this year whose parent is in and out of jail, and therefore he is in and out of class, in and out of good behavior. There's a woman in the counseling office who has been his lifeline. You just need to know that when you cut our programs, when you cut our support staff, when you cut our counselors, you are cutting us.
Okay. Thanks, Barb. David, do you want to respond?
I was going to say, that would be your local school board's decision on the cuts. The state provides the money. If you look at the base student allocation, the current one was implemented in 1998, and you correct it for inflation, the base student allocation right now is 1% above inflation. The $400 figure that you're looking at spending versus what actually inflation is. So you have to realize there's a consequence. If they raise the BSA $400, your local property tax has to go up in local property contribution. There's a tie-in. You're going to have to pay more as a property taxpayer, which if that's what everybody wants, that's fine. But to say that it's not inflation-proofed is just incorrect mathematically. It is 1% ahead.
Can I make a comment?
But there's no mechanism that inflation proofs it. It's been at the same amount for the last 4 years.
Yeah, but it was corrected 8 times prior. So they tend to go a little past what they think they need. And then it's just been, I could give you the graph, but numbers are numbers. It basically right now we're $56 ahead where it would have been. If you'd put an inflation proof factor in 1998, we'd be $54 ahead per child, per student on the BSA than we would be if we had inflated.
Dina, did you want to respond to Barb's comment?
Actually, I wanted to respond to something that David said about the property taxes. And here in Anchorage, there's a cap that was placed on property taxes and how much can be contributed to our school district. And unfortunately, here in Anchorage, we actually are above that cap. So the amount that we collect for our schools does not, my understanding is it doesn't entirely go to the schools. So we in Anchorage are totally hamstrung. We would not even be able to say we'd like to increase our taxes to pay for schools. So there are some communities that are below their contribution limit, so they could in fact raise taxes to contribute to the schools, but that comment is not accurate for Anchorage. We, if the legislature decides to increase the BSA, it will be completely from the state in the case of Anchorage.
All right. Let's go to Chris. Chris, did you have a comment about ASD?
Yeah, first off, I wanted to say how happy I've been with my daughter's education. She started at O'Malley and ended up at Rogers Park and then at Romig and then finally in the seminar program at West, and she's just had a really terrific ride through the Anchorage School District through the efforts of a lot of dedicated teachers. And so I was also in I'm a retired school district employee, so I've had skin in the game that way, and I worked in a support staff function. And what I see is that young teachers, we have one in our family, are just getting hammered by reduced supports because of, you know, budget cuts and people being let go, and that we do far too little, I think, in this community to really celebrate all the wonderful things that are happening in our schools. it would have to be daunting, I think, to be a new teacher in a school district such as ours at this point and really wonder where the support is coming from. You know, personally, I wouldn't mind raising my property taxes if it meant keeping graduation coaches and elementary counselors and school nurses and some of the support staff available to assist our students and our teaching staff. You know, and it comes down to, you know, and David Meese mentioned it, is this legislative dance that we seem to do every year to activate people to lobby the legislature. But a lot of this is due to the ridiculous way we have of funding our schools on a year-to-year basis. And if we could go into forward funding and have a more reliable long-term plan for funding, I think it would certainly help a lot for school districts to plan, so you wouldn't be doing this, you know, sudden doom and gloom and everything, the sky is falling kind of approach. So I guess those are, I have many other things that
right.
I would like to say, but I think that's probably enough.
Well, thanks for your call, Chris, and probably one issue per caller is good, but those were both good ones. And as I understand it, the governor's bill would increase the BSA over a three-year period, so it's essentially
right.
three-year forward funding, but smaller than some people have asked for. Just ask everybody here in the panel, I would guess, agrees that it would make more sense to forward fund than to do it the way we've done, where the state money comes in after the school districts have done their budgets. David, would you?
Well, yeah, it's out of sync. One of the other things that Dina didn't mention was that the fact that the legislature actually changed the mill rate from 4 to 2.63 a couple years ago. So that amount that the district could collect got reduced. So, you know, you have this magic thing going on of the state keeps increasing its funding. They lowered what the city has to contribute. And then the federal, because of sequestration, also cut some funds.
Mm-hmm.
But it still basically comes down to an allocation issue. Do you choose as a school board under local governance to allocate for what you think is important or what you want to do and activate politically?
Do you have a comment on that, Dina?
Well, I guess I would just make a couple of comments. One, when the BSA mechanism was started in 1998, I think a lot of people would agree that funding for schools was probably quite low at that point. And then in 2004, when Governor Murkowski was in the governor's office, it was raised a fair amount. And under Governor Palin, it was raised again. I think the recognition was that we were really below where we needed to be because of the crash of 86 and how bad the economy was at that point. So it was a lot of catch up. So yes, our funding has gone up higher than a rate of inflation. But since 2011, we have been flat funded. And since 2011 in Anchorage, we have had to cut significant positions. And to say that, why can't we cut from the staff and not from the teachers? Well, that's what we've been doing since 2011. We've had 3 years of cuts to primarily support staff. And as I think Barb, the first caller or the second caller said, those people really do support the teachers. So anytime somebody like that is eliminated, it puts more of a burden on the teacher. So just in the past couple of years, we've lost 13% of the staff in the central support services. We've lost 5% of the staff in ancillary and building support, and we have not lost any positions in the teachers. And this year, we're just to the point where we cannot cut the staff anymore. It has to go into the teaching area. So the past 3 years, the cuts have hurt students, but not quite as directly as it would have if it had been classroom teachers. However, mm-hmm. our teachers are getting more and more burdened and more burned out, and it's hard for them to teach effectively when they don't have the support that they need.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking about school funding today. Two guests in the studio, Dina Mitchell, you just heard from, is from a parent group called Great Alaska Schools. David Neese is with Alaska Policy Forum, and we're taking your calls and emails. The number here in Anchorage is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. That's the toll-free number. And we also accept emails at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Here's a question that comes to us by email from a listener who brings up an interesting topic about school choice. We obviously have a lot of choices in Anchorage now with charter schools and alternative schools, Typically, the transportation for those schools is provided by the parent. And some folks have said that, I'm just kind of summarizing what he has to say here. Some folks says that reduces the opportunity for lower income kids who parents can't necessarily drive. He says, doesn't it make more sense to offer more opportunity to students in their neighborhood schools? Seems to me that expanding charter schools and using public funds for private schools further complicates the transportation issue and further separates the haves and the have-nots, since not all parents can afford or have the time to transport their children across such a large school district to whatever school they choose. And that's coming to us from Jacob. David, you're advocating for a more of a choice system. How do you respond to that transportation issue?
Well, the House actually passed out an education committee yesterday. They changed it. They're requiring school districts to provide transportation to schools of choice. If the neighborhood school bus is driving by the charter school, Winterberry, Stellar, they would drop the kids off. I mean, that just absolutely makes sense. They are charging the state funds it as a block grant, unfortunately. In the 60s, you sent the state a, here's what we spent, they reimbursed you, and then in the 70s, they moved to, here's a block grant, you'll get a certain amount per child. So right now, they get paid whether or not they haul children. And so they, on all the charter schools, except for one that's housed, basically it's part of they have to. And it's the same thing with most of the optional. I believe there is one optional school that the district provides public bus transportation to. So yeah, it would be great to have them. Be nice to have them co-housed in buildings instead of having to go out and lease buildings. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the issue here. There's a lot of moving parts. Just going back to the budget.
You know, and I'd really like to stick. We've got so many
okay,
calls.
Go ahead. Yeah,
be
go
glad
ahead.
To do one.
I'll answer one.
Yeah, yeah. And let's now go to Janice, who's calling in. Janice, thanks for waiting for so long. What's your question or comment?
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. I am the state PTA advocacy chair, and I have worked in special education with the Anchorage School District for 19 years. And I think there's a big piece that's missing in regards to Governor Parnell's more bang for the buck theory. I think now the opportunity for parents with special needs kids to send them to school is wonderful. All kids, we want to educate all kids, not just the ones that we think are able to learn up to the quality that we see. And I also think that with the governor's non-visiting of the schools that we have in the district, he's not getting an opportunity to see what wonderful things. And as a paraprofessional, my job, as cuts get made, my job gets more and more intense, because where there were three of us dealing with 50 kids, now there's me. And not that I don't do it for the money. I love my job. I love what I do, or I wouldn't have been here almost 20 years. But I really think the governor is a little off task in checking out personally some of the things that are going on in the Anchorage School District. It's a wonderful district. And I really think that if he spent more time seeing and talking to parents regarding what the school district is doing for their children, I think it would be wonderful. It might even open his eyes. The more I hear bang for the buck, the more I want to just bang somebody.
All right.
Ahead.
All right. Thanks, Janice. And just in the interest of so many callers, we're going to go on to Diane, who's calling about the BSA. Diane?
Hi. Thank you for having me. The reason that I'm calling is I have two children in the school district, and they went to private school for several years. And then I noticed there was a lot of attrition. My friends were moving their kids into the public schools, and I was amazed that at this excellent private school that people were moving into the public schools. Well, there were so many choices, and they were so fantastic. They are so fantastic. So we took the jump, and my kids like their teachers. They like their schools. They like the programs that are available. There's so many opportunities. They're both in secondary school now. The problem is, and the reason I'm calling, is because every year I heard of cuts, and I didn't act because I thought, oh, I hear there's fat in the school district. And I realized finally, after so many years of inaction, that there is no fat in the school district. And I know that there's a lot being bandied about bureaucracy and what could be done better, and there is fat here, and the teachers are bad. There's a lot of either information that is way too technical for my pay grade, or it's just false information, a lot of false information about the Anchorage School District and about teachers. So my point is that what I need as a parent, I'm on the front line, my kids are on the front line, I'm their support, is that the state needs to step in and increase the per student funding. And the number that I've set upon after the research that I've done is $400 or more. The state needs to do that. Now, all the professionals can work out all the details, they can innovate, but there's a great school district here in Anchorage, so much so that people leave the private schools, the very few private schools we have, to go into this wonderful school district. We have a great thing. The state needs to fund it. Our school board will do what they can with the money. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks, Diane. And I think we do get caught up in some confusing jargon. And I'll maybe just do a very quick primer for listeners. The state funds a large portion of education in Alaska through what's called the foundation formula. And the amount of money that comes out of that formula is different for each community based on the area cost differential. It costs more to educate a kid in some communities than in others. So the basic input to it is what we call the base student allocation. That goes into a big spreadsheet and comes out to say how much money per kid. It comes out at the other end of the formula, and we use this BSA. It's essentially a number that goes into a formula, and so as we talk about, should it go up $65 or should it go up $400, it's essentially picking a figure that will then come out at the other end, and the amount is set in statute each year as a basically entitlement, and the big debate is, should it be increased or should it be left the same? I guess the caller was saying we've got very good public schools in Anchorage, and I guess I'd be interested in what our panelists think. I mean, are the schools in Anchorage, would you agree that we give kids an excellent education in the Anchorage School District?
I think that we have a huge amount of choices here in Anchorage, mm-hmm. and I think there are very good schools. I think that there are probably a few teachers who are not performing at the level they should be performing at. That's true. I worked at a huge ad agency. There were people there who weren't performing at the right levels. My husband works for BP. I would venture to guess there might be a few people there who aren't quite up to par. Mm-hmm. But on the whole, I have to say that I have been very impressed by the dedication of the teachers and their willingness to work with my children. The first year we were here, my daughter was having some issues with her fifth grade class at her elementary school, and the teacher invited her to have lunch with her a few days, talked to her about some of the social issues, helped her with before school. I mean, these teachers are willing to do what it takes to help our children. Mm-hmm. I've had meetings with the middle school team over at Romig on a couple of occasions. They are really, really willing to go with the nine yards. And I'd like to make a couple of comments just real quickly.
I'm just going to stop you because we've got so many callers lined up, and I'm just going to keep everybody to one response. Just trying to be fair, I'll give you a minute or two to do a closing statement at the end. David, Niece, the same question for you, and just backing it up, there's a question from an emailer directed to you. What ways would you cut the district's budget? And as a teacher, did you see a lot of waste, and what were your main criticisms? The caller said she thinks the school district is doing really well. What's your critique of it?
The school district does really well by zip code. There are some excellent zip codes in Anchorage, and basically the school performance is tied to demographics. If you have a high wage earner, highly educated mother, you tend to have better results in the school. But just let's take West High for an example. It has a budget of about $11.3 million. It receives from the state $16.5 million. It receives from the city another $8 million. It gets $24 million from the state and the city combined. Its budget's $11 million. That's $13 million that's going somewhere else in the district. And that's where it comes down to. I think we can all agree you want to have your teachers and your transportation, your buildings, heat and light and stuff like that. And you start with that core and build the budget out. The district does not build the budget that way. It doesn't start with, here's your core, build out from that. It starts, here's what we got, where can we cut? And, you know, cutting 300 staff positions after you add 1,500, that's not really a cut. Right. So that's how you work it.
It's Hometown Alaska, hot and interesting and quick and fast-paced discussion today, and lots of callers to get to. We're going to get to as many as we can in the second half. We're already halfway done today. Got two interesting guests in the studio, Dina Mitchell from Great Alaska Schools, David Neese from the Alaska Policy Forum. My name's Charles Woolforth. We'll be back after this break.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 9 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
It's Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Woolforth, and our subject today is school funding. In the studio with me today are Dina Mitchell with Great Alaska Schools and David Neese from the Alaska Policy Forum, and many, many callers. The phone number here is 550-8433. If you're calling from outside Anchorage, you can call toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And you can also get to us through email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And right now I'd like to bring Mark on the line. Mark has been waiting a very long time. Thanks for being with us, Mark.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having this show, Charles. My comment is about the Anchorage School District. I've had kids both in private school and now they're in the public school, and their experience has been fabulous. They're now in both middle school and high school, and I must admit, I get so tired of hearing the pro-voucher proponents basically dismissing Anchorage education as a failure, or as I've read some of the things on that Mr. Neese said when he was running for school board, that he gives an F for not setting consequences to the school board for students and teachers of lack of performance. My kids have never experienced that in public schools. So what I also find odd is where Mr. Neese is trying to say that we should keep property taxes down, when I would assume his entire career was paid by my and other people's property taxes and his retirement probably. So while he is taking on this role of budget hawk, it seems to be at a late stage in life.
All right. So, thanks, Mark. Let's let David Neese respond to that. Go, David?
Oh, okay. First of all, my kids are both successful graduates out of Service High's seminar program, so I also had a positive experience with the ASD. But I'm in the minority. If you look at the fourth grade scores and the last test round of testing, we're like 48th out of 50. So, you know, it depends on what you measure. I'm still an advocate that, you know, fully funding schools starts with setting what your core mission is, what your core thing is. And I think that in Anchorage, we're fairly adequately funded. There are, like I said earlier, there are other districts outside the state that are desperately in need of an increase. Anchorage is not one of them, in our opinion.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Let's go to Marnie, who's calling about SB 147. You'll have to tell us what that is.
Hi. I believe SB 147 is the SB 147 is the bill on the floor for increasing the BSA to 404 and inflation proving it.
Could be.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I have a number of questions. I suppose
I'm going to hold you to one because we've got so many callers. So
yeah.
Go right ahead.
Okay. So it comes to the funding flow and where everything comes from and where it goes to. And I do want maybe Deanne and David could talk more about the whole of Alaska and the villages, how you know, the state going away from the ESDA has caused quite a bit of Title I funding loss, if I'm wrong, and then also how that funding may change with the school board. I know that David mentioned that that the funding solution for Anchorage is different because the formula, it's the school board's decision, it's not the state's decision, the state just provides the money. But we're also looking at the caps made by state law on how much those communities can contribute. And so I'm just looking at the whole funding formula, ESEA compliance, and how that's affecting our state and how the state wants to privatize. Is that passing the buck?
All right. And pretty complicated question. Dina, do you want to take that one on, or are you...
Well, I guess I would just say that communities that don't have a property tax base do get a higher, the formula is very complicated, and communities that don't have the property taxes do get more from the state to make up for that difference. It's a one-to-one trade-off, basically. But in terms of the ESDA compliance, I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, this might be too technical a question for our show, but David, do you want to see the formula itself changed?
Well, our formula is probably up about time for review. Usually about every 15 years, there's a major rewrite on the formula. And so, no, this isn't 1998 Alaska. So it is probably up for review. The big thing you have is like with Ketchikan saying that when you have the formula we're working with right now, unincorporated areas of the state, when they have their federal in lieu of payments, which is like just paying because you don't have property tax, the state has a responsibility to take care of those areas. So it's a discouragement for the rest of the state to finish. We're not a finished state by any measure. We don't have counties everywhere. We don't have boroughs everywhere. And that is part of the basic problem. We're not finished, so our formula always has to be tweaked a little bit. And I think the legislators try every single year to try to give more money and try to tweak it.
Right. It becomes a sectional rivalry thing. Thomas is calling about the BSA. Thomas?
Hi. Thank you, Charles, for hosting such an important topic. I'm calling to voice my support for Senate Bill 147 and would like to see the BSA increased by $404. And the reason is, here in the Anchorage School District, you know, the cuts have already been significant, and I think unbeknownst to many within the general public, one of the cuts we're facing next year with current funding is elimination of the middle school model. And what essentially that will do is move us back to the old junior high model, which many of us experienced as students and probably none of us wish to relive. And what essentially the middle school model provides right now is team planning time for a core group of teachers who meet daily for 45 minutes and can really personalize a student's education, address possible learning disabilities, at-risk behaviors. It's a time to meet with parents, hold individual education plan meetings, can even pull students in and, you know, discuss issues with individual students. All that's lost under the junior high model, and it would go back to sort of an assembly line approach, an archaic approach to educating a group of students who are really in their most formative years.
And you're referring to the budget the district has adopted based on the expected funding.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. And if listeners don't know, the district has to adopt a budget before the state says how much money it's going to give. So it's always this process of projecting based on what's expected in terms of funding. And so those are the cuts that have been put out there. Everyone
right.
seems
and
to be nodding.
Eliminating the middle school model also eliminates teaching positions. And I would argue that there would be a disproportionate number of layoffs, you know, in the middle school mm-hmm. as a result of it.
Thanks for your call, Thomas. Let's go to Donna, who is calling also about the BSA, I believe, in transportation. Donna?
Yes. Thank you, Charles, and thanks to your panelists. It's a fascinating, rich, and complex program. I have no children in the Anchorage School District right now, but my grandchildren will be, and I want them to have the best possible education they can. I'm concerned about the BSA because I listened this morning to the Senate Education Committee, and during that hearing, it was mentioned that while the governor has proposed a modest BSA increase, he's also proposing that all charter schools should have transportation to those schools. That's not currently in the school district budget, and I'm worried that what the right hand gives, the left hand will take away. I wonder if your guests have any comments. Thank you.
All right. I think Mr. Neese has already commented. He thinks that is a good idea to have that transportation. Let's turn to Dina Mitchell from Great Alaska Schools. What's your opinion?
Well, I personally think that it would be a very, very difficult thing to finance because, take, for example, Chugach Optional School. I know there are people from South Anchorage. There are people from Eagle River. There are people from East Anchorage who go to this school that's in West Anchorage. It would be prohibitively expensive to require the school district to bus all those children to that school. I do agree with Mr. Neese that there are a lot of ways that we can make our neighborhood schools much stronger, and our neighborhood schools are very good. They serve a different clientele than most of the optional and charter schools do, but there are a couple of situations where there are optional schools and neighborhood schools together, like Central Middle School for Science. I believe Bowman has an optional and a middle school program within the same school, and I think if we can do more of that, then we achieve both objectives, and we don't. I don't know how we would finance busing kids to the optional and to the charter schools.
It's Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Woolforth, and we're talking about school funding. Dina Mitchell is with a parent group called Great Alaska Schools Anchorage, and David Neese is with the Alaska Policy Forum. All parents in the room, all with kids who have gone through, are going through the Anchorage School District, and obviously from the number of callers and emails, we're getting huge amount of concern in the community about these issues. Here's an email that comes from June Sobosinski, who is a vice president of the United Way of Anchorage. No amount of imagining yields a scenario where the looming teacher reductions in Anchorage will lead to better reading scores, better math scores, higher graduation rates, or more young people ready to be successful in the workplace. United Way of Anchorage is advocating for an increase in the BSA to meet the cost of inflation to provide adequate, sustainable funding for public education, which is truly the foundation of our civic infrastructure. We must fully support this essential infrastructure. And we would also like to see the conversation fundamentally change so that it's first and foremost about improving outcomes for our students. Let's work on a thorough plan for that and figure out how to resource it. So as the moderator today, I'm just taking the comments as they come in order. And now I'd like to turn to Celia, who's on the line. Celia?
Great. I was calling about the middle school model, but I just wanted to add a couple of points just from my personal experience. Like, my kids were extremely flaky in middle school, but they're top students now, but back then they really needed that staff-student connection to help them understand the importance of applying themselves in school and taking it really seriously. So when they got to high school, they were mentally ready for that, and they knew that every grade counted for their future and their college. And I really question whether it's really cost-effective to abandon this model now that it's been in use for the last decade and everyone's been trained and the whole thing has been implemented. I mean, it seems like it's not cost-effective to stop it now. Mm-hmm. Now that we've had it for so long. So that's my comment. And unlike Mr. Neese, I see it as a lack of allocation issue, not as a district choice issue at this point.
Mr. Neese, what's your sense? You were a middle school teacher.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, I feel old. I started with junior high teaching, and then we went to middle school mm-hmm. when I was at Hanshu. So I've been there for both. There's pros and cons on both. Junior high kids are not fully formed adults by any stretch of the imagination. We offered 11 levels of math at Hanshu when we were a junior high model. We had everything from remedial to, I believe it was geometry, all in the same building. All the kids didn't have to go up to service and stuff. When we went to middle school, we went to 3 levels of math. And just as a math teacher, you have to go to where the kid is. And it's really tough to do when you get 114 kids in your pod of children that you're dealing with and you're trying to coordinate lesson plans. Has it worked to improve scores? Probably not. Was it good for the social-emotional of the child? Probably, yes, it was. So there's that trade-off in there. So I think, like I said, if you go back to the basic discussion of what do you want your schools to have, teachers and staff and stuff like that, and how do you allocate the money for that? Because right now the district is making some choices that I don't think parents would make. I really don't think the parents would choose to cut teachers.
All right, let's go to Bob, who's calling. And Bob, you had something that that David Neese said that you disagreed with?
Yes. Mr. Neese indicated that corrected for inflation, we spend $56 more than we did when we started the BSA. And while that may be true, he omits 3 items which would change the conclusion he draws from that. The first is that I think it was low and thought of as low when we started it. But the second and third are more important. The second is that we have a lot of statutory requirements now that we didn't then mm-hmm. to educate folks with disabilities and different kinds of disabilities and Title IX and a whole variety of things, which draws a lot of money off of what we of the core teaching for the kinds of kids we're talking about. So we now do a lot, have, by statute, have to do a lot more with that money. So if you take that out, we spend a fair amount less than we did when we started. And the third is we have a much more diverse community. West High didn't used to be 47% white and a majority minority issue. And while that's a good thing that we have those minorities, it also requires us, frankly, that West High spend a fair amount of money integrating them and doing things that we didn't used to do. So if you include those in it, we actually have a lot less money for the core responsibilities than we did when the BSA started.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Let me turn that over to David Neese. Do you agree that it's more expensive to educate kids now because of federal mandates and other issues?
I was going to say, yeah, No Child Left Behind was not a friend of educators, and it was unobtainium is what we called it when it came out. It's just not going to happen. Everybody's not going to be proficient in 2014. So the waiver helped. There's still a lot of federal regulations. The state did increase, the intensive needs people 300% in the last 3 years, and they've increased some of the other. So we've increased formula funding 22% in the last 7 years. The BSA has been flat for four. So it still comes down to, unfortunately, the state never defined what a basic education in the state of Alaska was and how much we're going to fund it. So we started with $3,700 in 98. We're at $5,680 now. That's up $2,000 roughly in the last 15 years. So it's beating inflation, but yeah, there are costs added in. The federal government and sequestration lowered their amount, and there was no pullback into that to kick that in there. So it still comes down to allocation. You've got money coming in. You have to allocate it really well when you are shortchanged. Just the same thing you do in your house budget. Right. What's really important.
So I guess we're really in a discussion about how much should be allocated from the state for schools and how much should come from local government and what level of the schools we feel we can have. All these things work together and people just come to different conclusions. Dina?
Absolutely. I'd like to just chime in on what the last caller said. We now, in the last 8 years, we went from 26% of students who are identified as economically disadvantaged to 48% currently. And I'm sure a lot of listeners have heard that East High School is the most diverse high school in the entire 50 United States. West and Bartlett are not far behind. West has a student population. 10% of the students at West come from families that are homeless. 26 of our students are transient, and we have 12% of students who are English language learners. So we have, and this is all, these are all things that have changed significantly in the last 10 years. So we have some serious challenges this now that we didn't have 10 years ago. So we've got ELL support. We've got, obviously, there's a lot of support that goes along with this.
Mm-hmm. Valerie, you had a comment about funding? I think Valerie may have given up. She's waiting a long time. Bill, you're up next. Comment about private schools?
Yes. I was a high school principal for 14 years, retired now. And a couple of things here I'm wondering about is the schools do a lottery or whatever they do to get people in. What happens to those who are been cut off because of enrollment at the private schools? They don't have a chance to get in, apparently, and so we're not making this program available to everybody. I mean, this is vouchers also. The other comment I have is I hear these panels like you have over and over and over. They're great, but I have yet to run across one that has a private school representative to hear the other half of the program. That's it.
Well, all right. Dina and David, do you want to go first, Dina?
I'd like to just make a comment. The director of PNA, Pacific Northern Academy here in Anchorage, which I think many people regard as probably the top private school in town, is very opposed to vouchers. He feels that the strings that would come with that and the oversight that the state would have to impose to make sure that the funds were adequately allocated would make it difficult to run a private school effectively. And it was interesting because he talked about the fact that it cost, this was from an article that he wrote to, I believe, the Alaska Dispatch or the ADN. He said it cost them $20,000 to educate a student within PNA. So if you compare that to what we spend in the public school district, I think we actually are very, very efficient with our funds. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Did you have a comment?
Well, yeah. He came up here from, I believe, Indiana because they actually implemented the voucher system, and he was losing his private school students to public charter schools and public optional schools because they, for the parents, could get a cheaper education, get the same kind of education. Right now, if we had a voucher system and they accepted public money, they would basically have to follow the rules. Right now, they don't accept any public money. They don't have to do the testing. They can be selective in who they bring in. I think your caller had a really good point in the fact that the charter schools with the lottery system we have right now has an 800 child waiting list. And you can't get in unless your kid's already in the system.
Can I make one comment about that? Because my kids have been on various charter school lists, and they have gotten into every single charter school that they were on the list for. I think that those lists seem very high, but sometimes you'll get the call a week after school has started and your child's already in the school they're at and they don't want to make the change at that point. Or you might get a call from Polaris, but your child already got into Stellar, so you've made that choice already.
Right. Some get in, some don't. I know that, and I know parents on both sides of that line. It's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about education funding. We've got a few minutes left here for callers. The number in Anchorage is 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And I will save a little time for some closing statements. But now we have Lucy on the line. You have a concern about science and technology equipment?
Yes. I never got a letter to the editor written. So I was not aware of this until my two children got into high school. They are still in high school. My youngest just started this year at one of the newest high schools in the area. He takes a biology class. He has 30 students in his class. However, there are only 14 microscopes. That's all they could fund for. And they have textbooks that can only be looked at in the classroom. For outside the classroom, the ASD has paid for online availability of the book. However, there's times when we get computer bugs and other things that it's very frustrating. He can't get his homework turned in. All of this is going on while there's a national dialogue about our kids and how important science and technology are. I would not have known this if I didn't have kids in the high schools here. My other son attends a different high school, and we have purchased science books for him, chemistry book and a biology book, used from Amazon.com, and that's where the teacher told us to go to find it, because it couldn't be provided in the public high school he goes to.
All right. Good comment, Lucy. Thanks.
I wouldn't have known this.
Yeah, and you've let people know, and I don't want to cut you off, but we're running out of time, and that was an excellent comment. I very much appreciate your calling in. Let's go to Catherine, who I think wanted to add into the discussion about the middle school model. Catherine?
Hello. Thank you very much for holding this program, and I'm there's many things. My head is swimming with everything that's been said today. I'm a teacher. Frankly, right out there, we'll say that. And we're teaching in real time. And the needs, the diversity of our population and the needs that are presented in our classroom are immense. And we do not have the resources to address the children in our classroom, the students and their needs, and given all the curriculum and the demands. The information that people work with is outdated. Come into our classrooms. I invite people to come into our classrooms and take a look at what we are challenged with each day, and we do the best we can with the tools we're given. I appreciate so much the people who are supportive of the work we do. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Catherine. And now we've got We've got just about 3 minutes left, and I want to give each of our panelists roughly a minute and a half to just make some final comments on the issues we've been discussing. And David Neath, do you want to weigh in?
Yeah, I think it's very important for all your listeners to understand that a lot of the budget choices are made locally. So if you have a problem with the way the budget is, actually address your school board, review your school board candidates, select the one that models you, that you get an election coming up. The other thing is $400 BSA increase is $100 million. It's $100 million in the state budget. That has to come from somewhere. So as you're advocating for that, also think, where do you want to cut the state budget $100 million? Because it's got to be a back and forth on it. So if you want to put in education, you got to cut it somewhere else. But take a look, get informed. I appreciate the opportunity to come in today. And I hope your listeners will go out there and research their school board candidates, because it starts local.
All right. Thanks very much for being with us. Dina Mitchell with Great Alaskan Schools, you've got about a minute and a half.
Oh, my gosh, that's not enough time. So that is true. It is $100 million statewide. And I think that our children are absolutely our greatest natural resource. In a state that is full of amazing natural resources, we have to find the money to put into our children. We have, I believe, 12 or I'm the order of magnitude. I'm sorry. It's been a long hour. We have either $12 billion or $17 billion in our reserve for the state. And I understand we need to be careful because depending on how you feel about the future of the state, but we can't afford to cut back on our educational investment now because 10 years from now, we may run out of money. 10 years from now, we may be awash in oil. We don't know. We need to keep supporting this. And I just want to say that in the years since we have been increasing the BSA, our graduation rates have gone up tremendously, and our third grade reading scores, which are very telling, have gone up tremendously. The third grade reading scores have started to level off in the past couple of years since we've had flat funding. We cannot reverse the gains that we have made. We're looking at a 90% graduation rate by 2020, and we can make it if we keep supporting our schools. And I'd like to just close with this thought, that 90% of people with children in the schools are very happy with their schools and would recommend their schools to a friend or a fellow parent. 40% of the general public would. So I think it's very important for the general public who may not be in the schools and may not realize all the wonderful things that our schools are doing to get in there, see what's going on, and understand why parents have a 90% satisfaction rate.
All
right. And please call your representatives, let them know you want the BSA increased, and we are going to have a rally on March 29th to support our students at the Lusac Library and let our elected officials know that our children need to be our top priority.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. And we did have one final email pointing out the success of the Alaska Native Culture Charter School with increased test scores over time. Recently received an award, and the person saying, so success isn't only based on zip code. So in any event, great debate. Two wonderful guests, David Neath, Alaska Policy Forum. Thanks so much for being with us. Dina Mitchell, Great Alaska Schools Anchorage. You both did a great job of representing your case and had many, many good callers. Next week on Hometown Alaska, join host Kathleen McCoy to talk about the city's Code Across Anchorage program, a civic hacking movement that uses public data to answer big questions. Pat Yak is the chief content officer for Alaska Public Media. Monica Goki is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.